Ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them. And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hey, soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of Team Player's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayr.us. And come give Team Player a look.
Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week I have Cassandra, a young lady that grew up playing soccer here in North Texas that went off to Spain to play because she won a scholarship through her club. This is not an ordinary story. It's a remarkable journey. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
Do you have any moments, like looking back right now and going through everything? We were just talking about the leagues and everything, but stands out or memories that really stand out that has been a positive influence on your game?
I think one of my biggest memories was that season coming back from when I was feeling really down and unhappy with the coach and team that was not feeling good about playing. That entire season with Coach Tomas on Sting, he turned everything around for me. That whole season, there are times as a player where you don't perform or you don't perform as good as you wanted to and you feel down or whatever the case may be. My teammates, my coach, we were all so close-knit and it was amazing. We went to a camp in Tarleton at Tarleton University where all of the Sting teams went, and there was this, like, with any other Sting team, there was a sense of unfriendliness. But being with my team, it was so much fun. You, I got to have a little preview of what I was going to live in Spain. We got to live in the dorm. We spent a few days there. We got to train in the morning, go to lunch, have a little bit of a break, train in the afternoon. And all of those experiences with that team and the coach specifically, I think as they are happy memories. Obviously, that's why I remember them the most, but also because they really just brought that love back for the game for me.
That's awesome. Now let's move on to being 17 and earning a scholarship from Villarreal. So how did this transpire? Because you did hop around and you did play with the boys team. Is that how you were able to earn the scholarship, or how did this all transpire so people understand how Villarreal does, what Villarreal does great?
I'm sure Coach Gio, it's been a minute since I've listened to his episode. He talks about the whole Villarreal process, so I'm not going to really go into that. But basically, oh my goodness, and I swear it was fate. I swear it was fate because I was still with FC Dallas and we were going to go to Nationals, or we had advanced to some huge tournament. And I was so excited and I was talking to Christian about it. And then the next day, we found out that we had gotten cheated out of points. They gave more points to some other team and they ended up advancing instead of us. And I was devastated. I was so upset. And Christian, and obviously he was like comforting and all of that, but he was like, Cassandra, listen, you want to feel better? Here's this. And he told me the whole story about how Villarreal happened. And he told me that the exact dates in which I was going to go play those Nationals was the first time ever that coaches from Villarreal were going to be sent to come here for the Summer AD camp. And so it was fate. It really was, to be honest. And so then, after the guys got affiliated with Villarreal, they send coaches from Spain every summer and they have the Summer ID camp. And playing with the boys obviously helped, but really it was simply the wanting to showing up to the camp that kind of got everything started. I went to the camp and it was the first time Coach David and Coach Ortu came. I got nervous and all of that, but it was great. And the following summer, I got told that I was chosen as the first ever North Texas player to go for the player training week. And I was 14 years old. And again, fate working its magic. It was literally, I went in January of 2020. I came back. And as soon as I came back, COVID happened. So I went literally at the perfect time to Spain for the first time ever. And so it was the player training week. I went over there. I was 14 years old. And over there, the age groups and the teams are a little bit different. They don't go by age. They go by category. So I was over there training with the C team, which had from as young to like 14 years old. And I was the youngest player there. I think I was 14. And the youngest from the Spain team was 15 up to 22-year-olds. And I came back from that player training week thinking, I have to go again. I have to go again. I loved it. I loved the town. I loved the soccer. I loved it all. And so after that, I mean, I continued to play with the boys. I always played club with girls on the side, but I always played with boys. In my head, it was to continue to get touches and to continue to improve as a player, but really it helped to maintain that connection with Villarreal. Anytime Villarreal had an event, I would make sure to show up to their camp. I would make sure to show up to whatever it is that was going on. And then about 3 years ago, three years ago, we had the first ever Villarreal North America ID camp. They invited certain players from each academy because they have, Villarreal has several academies across the US and in Canada and in Mexico as well. They invited quite a few players and it was just an ID camp where we showed up in Las Vegas and right after Christmas and right before New Year's to have 5 sessions in 3 days. And it was just soccer, 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 soccer. I was fortunate because when I was at the player training week and from whenever Coach David and Coach Ortu came, I was already familiar with some of the coaches. So they already were aware of me. And from there, I got invited to go to, I was selected for the North America team. And from there, I got to go to Mallorca for a tournament with the team. And then I went in May, April, I'm not sure when it was. And then later that summer, I got told I was selected to go to play in Villarreal in Spain on scholarship. So it was a lot of it was a lot of years of development and a lot of things that honestly, like, coincidentally lined up. Like I said, I really do think it was my destiny to go. But yeah, that's what got me all the way over there.
So how did your family react? I can't imagine sending, you said 14 over just before COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be 2020 timeframe. So how did your family react? That's a big deal, sending a kid over. Did they all go? Did someone go with you? Or I know your cousins were going over, but did any of your parents or siblings go over with you? Or
Yeah. Funny enough, my parents knew before I did. The scholarship was announced to me in the middle of a practice. The whole club got to hear that I was going. But before that, my mom and my dad had sat down and had the conversation with Coach Carlos. He was the one that told them, like, hey, we're planning on sending Cassandra over to Spain. How are you guys feeling about it? And I haven't talked about my dad very much because he works a lot. So he's not always able to go to our practices and go to our games. But I will always be grateful because the second it was announced to me, I turned, not the second, because obviously I was overjoyed, but I sat down with my mom and my dad and they told me. My dad was a little more worried than my mom was because, again, my mom had seen what I had gone through firsthand. They both sat down with me and they told me that, you know, it was up to me. It was whatever I wanted. And well, in my head, it was never even a question. I can tell you, I quite literally came home and was jumping up and down the rest of the night. My sisters couldn't believe it. They were, because I have three sisters, two of which play for Villarreal. And I can't even tell you how the night went because I was so clouded with emotion. I was so, so happy. Yeah, that was announced the summer when I was 17. And then I went through my senior semester, and I graduated a semester early. So in January, I finally got the chance to actually go to Spain. And when I did, my mom, my oldest sister, and my grandma actually went with me. It was the first time my grandma had gone anywhere. She lives in Mexico, so obviously she goes back and forth between here and Mexico. But it was the first time she ever traveled. It was my older sister and my mom. They have done a little bit of traveling, but it was the first time any of us ever went to Europe. And it was amazing. It was quite the experience, to be honest, to get to have my sister and my mom and my grandma there for the first time.
When you finally get over there and you get settled in, what was a typical day like for you? Was the tempo different? Was the life different style? What was it like?
It was very different. The first half of the season, so like I said, I got there in January. So really, I was only playing half a season until summer. And then at that time, I was still on scholarship and I had so much structure because obviously I was part of that program. So I would go, I would wake up in the morning, eat breakfast. And at the time, I had a roommate from Nebraska. And so we would go to the office together. And in the morning, it was always something soccer related, whether it be going to the gym, going to training, going to watch the first team train, watch film, whatever it may be. And then after that, we would eat. And then we would have Spanish class. And Spanish class, I'm sure you've seen, I'm pretty fluent in Spanish. I've grown up speaking Spanish at home. So Spanish class was more of a technicality for me to be there in the country. We would have Spanish class. And so that I always enjoyed that a little more than my roommate because being from Nebraska, she definitely didn't speak Spanish. And for me, I would mess around and stuff. But then after Spanish class, I liked to stay at the office, but sometimes we would go home and we would get ready for training, whatever. And then go to practice later at night. And then normally my day was done by like 10:15 p.m.
Wow, that's a long day.
Mm-hmm.
So as you were going over there, how would you describe the training? Was it I'm going to say more leisure, but was there more up-tempo days? Was there things that you worked on certain days? I read a lot about EPL teams and their training sessions. And I remember reading one time that I can't remember what club it was, but I spent a whole day once a week just working on passing. And that's all they did. Because passing's so important, and that first touch and the control. And to hear that, like, they spent a whole day. And when I try to tell my son, look, even the pros spend sessions just working on simple mechanics. Like, do you go through that type of stuff? Or was it more of what type of training sessions, if you don't mind Sherry?
So it always depended on what team I was with. Whenever I first got there, I had to have a license to play. And so I was training with the C team, but I didn't have my license yet. And then once I got my license, they gave me the lowest level license. So I was playing with the D team. So I would go train with the C team 3 times a week and then with the D team once a week. And with the C team, it was always more tactical, I think. And with the D team, it was a little, they were all a lot more tactical based than here. But with the D team, it was a lot more of like big game, getting to know the areas of the field and what is expected out of each zone. They don't ever really break the team up into positions. It was more of areas. So if you're working in the back, then that's the defense and the goalie. If you're working in the middle, that includes the D team. It was always a lot more big field, stuff like that. With the C team, it was so weird to me because every practice would be starting, we would have drills starting from a goal kick. It would always start with the goalie. And we would set up the field to where we were only using half. And we would have the team that was keeping the ball, that the ball would start with the goalie, and the team that was pressing. And it depended on what we needed to work on based off games and all of that. They would ask us to play with the keeper and to build out a certain way or to press a certain way. But that was one of the biggest things. And then whenever I was with the B team, had a little more variety in their sessions in terms of structure. It was always starting with some kind of passing drill. Whether it was a rondo, it was a passing circle. And then after that, it would go into small-sided games. It was, oh my goodness. Practicing with the B team was insane because we would be put in the smallest, tightest spaces ever with so many players inside. It was like nearly impossible to get out of there. And at the end of the day, we were forced to take the challenge of playing in those small spaces, and it would work. And so we always went from the passing to the small spaces and then taking that lesson, whatever it may be, in the small space and putting it into a larger space. So oftentimes the practice, aside from the passing, felt very repetitive, but it was incredible to see how forcing yourself to make a specific decision or to learn about the game in such a small space is so easily applicable to put it whenever you put it into the large space. Because in the tight space, you're so under pressure that whenever you get to the big space, it's easy almost. So that was really the structure for the B team. And then the practices in general, it was just faster tempo with the ball. Because I always say that the tempo here may look very intense because it's so much running and it's so much chasing. But over there, the players may not be doing as much, but the ball is doing double the work. So it was hard at first, but then once I started catching on, it was so fun. It was just fun.
Because you're playing football and you're not playing kickball.
Exactly.
I'll have to describe it much more than that. So did you have pressure when you were over there because you were coming from the state side, from the academy side, or did they treat you as if you were one of them?
I will say the first time that I got there, when I first went over there before coming back home for the summer, I did feel that little bit of pressure. I was the foreigner, and I got lucky because I wasn't the only one. I had my roommate from Nebraska, and then I had my friend from Canada. We all went through the same process. We all ended up playing as part of the PDP program over there. So I wasn't the only one. And for me, honestly, I could integrate myself a little bit easier than the both of them because I already spoke Spanish. It was a little bit of a mix because I spoke Spanish, so I could integrate myself better, but also I was still the foreigner. So no matter if I knew the language or if I knew the customs, I was never one of them. So when I first got there, was definitely a little bit of that pressure, but I came back home for the summer and then I went back in August, and it was a complete change, I'm not going to lie. In those few months that they got to know me before summer, I think I became a little bit more part of routine. It became normal to have people from outside on the team, and I immediately felt a change. And the team was always very welcoming. Whether I felt that pressure of being the foreigner or not, they were always welcoming. They always made sure that we were taken care of, both teammates and coaches and program-wise. But yeah, I think that pressure was definitely relieved a little bit whenever I was able to come back for another season.
Nice. Now, as you progressed over there, did you get, what was the highest level you got to play at, playing?
So games-wise, the highest I got to the B, which was RIF. I'm not sure if, you know, the leagues or this, the, yeah, over there. But there's Liga EFE, which, you know, that's the top of the top. And then they go into the Nacional leagues. So there's first, second, and third. We were in third. Then under that was the regional teams. The C team was playing with the regional. That was where I would play most often. But there were times where the B team was sore or they didn't like what they were seeing with the B team or liked what they were seeing with us. And so I got invited to play with the B team. And that was the highest that I got.
Nice. And you talked about these licenses. What are these licenses?
So I can't go fully into depth because honestly, the second I got mine, I said, I'm good to go. I don't need to know anything else. Basically, if you are an international player and we're like for us, we're coming from here going to there. If you're under 18, it is extremely difficult to get this license to play. So if you're not moving there like permanently with your family, if you're there either on scholarship or on a visa or whatever the situation may be, you are required a license. And if you're under 18, it is extremely difficult to get that. Unless you have a European passport. A lot of players, we had 20-something kids in the PDP program, and all of them that were minors, almost all of them that were minors, were there just to train. They wouldn't get to play any games with the team. They would train with their Spanish team. And then because they had so many players internationally, they could build a team to play scrimmages and to play other teams that were looking for an extra game or two. But if as a minor, it is extremely difficult to get that license. Luckily for me, I had just turned 18 whenever I left. So being over the age of 18 makes it a lot more easier to get that license. And then, like I mentioned, no matter the age, if you have a European passport, you're basically guaranteed that license.
Nice. Okay. So now let's move forward a little bit because this is where we got to talk this summer. So you came back home under unfortunate circumstances. So what happened? And let's talk about what's going on right now in your life.
It's a little bit not funny, but funny. So it was towards the end of the season. We had maybe 4 games left, 5 maybe. It was the normal game day. We were playing away. So the fields were a little bit far. It was like 2.5, almost 3-hour drive on the bus with the team. Again, normal game. Funny enough, I'm a midfielder. I have always been a midfielder at heart. I got there this season in August and they were in need of center backs. And so one preseason scrimmage, they said, hey, Cassandra, I'm going to need you to try there. And I said, okay, because flexibility, one of the most important things whenever you're going to a new team. And I just never left there after that. I played left center back for almost the entire season. There were a few games here and there where they needed a midfielder, so I would step up. And this game, this was the number one team. We were a little bit short on midfielders, and they said, Cassandra, you know, we want you here. You're going to play midfield. And I was so excited. It was one of the first games that I was playing midfield again. And it was a tough game. We were keeping up. It was the first place team, Elche. And maybe 5 minutes before the game ended, I was defending. There was a girl. She had her back to me. So I was trying to keep her facing her own goal. When she cut to one side and I went to make a change of direction, like I have so many times before. And in that moment, I just felt a pop and something wrong with my knee. And I even tried to step again and it didn't. It would give. And so I went to the floor, and I can't really get into the specifics of how it happened because it all happened so fast that I can't even tell you like which way my knee went, or I just know it was rough. My knee immediately started swelling and I got taken to the locker room. And funny enough, we weren't on Elche's home field because they were doing some renovations done. So we were at a random park, not park, it was a field, but at a random place, and they didn't have any trainers. So I was left in the locker room, and the knee, every player knows you don't want to injure your knee, no matter if it's ACL or not. And so that was one of the moments where it really hit me. Like, I was alone. I had a random girl's mom in the locker room asking me if I needed anything when all I wanted was a trainer or my own mother to be there and comfort me. And so then at that point, it was middle of the day in Spain. So it's a 7-hour difference. It was still like, I can't even tell you what time it was, maybe like 3, 4 a.m. in Texas. And I called Christian. Christian, you know, but I don't know if anyone else knows. He had just recovered this May, April time from his own ACL surgery. So I called him. I called him panicking. I was like, Christian, I think I tore my ACL. I was freaking out. So then he got me to calm down. He reassured me, telling me like there's so many things going on in the knee that it might not be the ACL. It might just be your MCL, or it might just be meniscus, or it might just be a sprain. You never know. And so I calmed down a little bit, and that's just how the injury happened. So I sat out for the rest of the game, and I was able to walk, but I was limping because my knee was really swollen and I was in a lot of pain. And then we had the unfortunate 2.5-3 hour bus ride back to the Villarreal fields. And at that point, it was getting time where people were waking up back home. So I texted my mom like I always do. And ironically, it was my mom's birthday. I texted her, and I was in pain. I was stressing. But no matter how I felt being over there, I always wanted to make sure that I didn't worry my parents. I'm sure that they were worried, what if I got sick or what if something happened when I was so far away and they were helpless because I'm on the other side of the world. So I always tried to make sure not to worry them. I tried to break the news to her and my family a little bit easier. And I was like, Mom, like I got a little bit hurt in my game, something about the knee. And so then she was like, oh my gosh, what happened? And I explained to her. Once I got back to the Villarreal field, she was concerned, but she was hoping it wasn't that. They sent me to the hospital, and I had one of my coaches take me to the hospital. And it's a little bit long of a story here. I got taken to the hospital. That was just a checkup where they did an x-ray and then they scheduled an MRI. And it wasn't until about a month later when I got my results. It was difficult because it was right when Easter happened. So there was like a week of no working. I couldn't get an appointment in that week. And so it was a little bit difficult. But after about a month, finally, I got my MRI results. And it was, again, crazy circumstance. I'm not sure if you or anyone else have heard, but there was a blackout whenever I was in Spain. There was a blackout in all of Spain, in parts of Portugal, parts of France. And we had no power. We had no service. So I couldn't communicate with anyone. And I couldn't check my results for my MRI. So it was a day of like me having to mentally just calm myself because I couldn't talk with anyone. My roommate was out of town. So that was, it was a little bit nice because I went out on a walk. It was painful, but it was helpful mentally. And so then the next day I woke up. First thing I did was check my results, and I found out that I had torn my ACL.
So now you came back home, and did you have your surgery over there, or did you come back home and have surgery?
So I came back home. I had debated what was going on, what I would do. But after finding out I tore my ACL, I started going to the office more often. I had a lot more appointments. But within 2 weeks of me getting my injury, my mom called me on her way to work, like we always did. And she was like, Cassandra, I have bad news. And I was like, oh my goodness, what happened? And the night before, my younger sister, Yaritza, had hurt her knee in practice. We were no way. I had gotten the news that it was made ACL. Yes, she had hurt her knee, but like we were all praying that it wouldn't be her ACL as well. And she got her MRI done sooner because she was going to go on a trip with her school to Disney. And within a matter of days, she found out she had torn her ACL as well. I considered doing surgery in Spain. I had even considered maybe doing surgery back home and then going for rehab in Spain. But at the end of the day, whenever I got her doing surgery, I truly felt alone. The international office that took me to my doctor's appointments and took care of me and made sure I was doing okay mentally while I was there. So I had that support system there, but I had never gone through anything like this in my entire life. It was hard finding out the news and being alone. And I saw Christian go through his surgery. I saw him to think firsthand because I was in Spain, but I saw him go through his recovery, and quite literally both had the same injury, different leg. We both tore our ACL and meniscus. So yeah, that's how I came to the decision to come back home.
So now you're on the road to recovery And what are you doing now during this time of being on the road to recovery?
Right now, it's still a little bit difficult. I'm barely 3 months out. That may seem like a lot of time to some people. The expected full 100% recovery is about a year. So it's still a little bit early. And right now, all it is sticking to my PT routine. I only have PT in person 2 times a week, but every day I'm given exercises. Every day I have to make sure I stretch and make sure I, as simple as massage my scars to make sure I don't build up scar tissue. There's a lot more that goes into it than just going, showing up to appointments and doing what I'm told. I mentioned to you earlier another day that the physical part can be frustrating. My knee is always bothering me, whether it's painful or I just feel it different. But the biggest thing, honestly, is the mental aspect. Right now, again, like I mentioned, since I'm still early in the injury, I watch soccer and I still try to keep up with all of that. But mentally, it's a lot of finding out who I am outside of soccer so that I can balance that a little bit easier once I do recover. I'm hoping once I get later into the recovery, then I can go back to soccer. All of the touches that I can get, all of the, like, the physical aspect. I haven't ran in I don't know how long. So it's going to be tough. But as of right now, in this moment, because I'm still so limited, it's a lot of just sticking to my PT and mentally exploring a little bit.
So is there do you have a game plan for your soccer journey once you're able to get healthy again?
I actually am not sure, to be honest. Whenever I left Spain, I had a talk with my coaches. I had a talk with the coordinator, and they told me that I was always welcome back whenever if I were to come to that decision. So I tried to make sure that I left that door open. But coming back and having this injury and having so much time off, I'm not exactly clear with what I want to do yet. I know, obviously, I can't go through this whole podcast and not say this, but I still want to play. But seeing what that looks like is still a little bit unclear in my mind.
That's understandable. So with everything going on, is there any message you think that you would like to share with the listeners or parents that are listening in on this that might be helpful for them to understand your soccer journey and how it might apply to their young athletes that they have?
Honestly, it's for parents, it gets tough. I know, whether it be because I'm unhappy with my team or whether it be because they're unhappy with the performance, I know my mom had to watch me go through some low lows and she could get frustrated and she could go talk crap to the coach if she wanted to or whatever. But she always made sure that I had the maturity to know if I have an issue, that's my responsibility to go talk about it. For parents, it's simply giving that support that fortunately I had from both of my parents, willing to say, you have to work for this and I'm here to support you. And if that requires driving to who knows where or staying up late because you went to soccer practice instead of doing homework, then, you know, that's that. If that's what the kid wants, then I think that's the best thing that you could do. And as a player, two things that I had mentioned before that I always knew that I could control, that I made sure I had 110% of, was a good attitude. Something that coaches have always pointed out for my entire life is to have curiosity. If you have a question, don't be quiet. Don't think, oh my gosh, the coach is going to think I'm done because I don't know this. Even if it's a simple answer, the simple fact that you have a question and that you're willing to ask that question speaks so much about you as a player. And coaches see that 100%. No matter what the situation is, whether you're on a great team and you love your team or you're on a horrible team and you can't stand it, make sure to always have a good attitude. Always have a good attitude, because talent and physical aspects can speak a lot, but what speaks the most is your attitude. No one likes a talented player that thinks that is full of it and that they walk around like they're better than everyone. So it's attitude, in my opinion, is one of the biggest things. And that curiosity, always be willing to ask questions, always be willing to talk to your coach about it. Even if you have to the amount of times that I had to sit out on the side and draw it out on the whiteboard to make sure the coach understood what I was asking. They love that. They love that. And if you have questions, if you want to truly know the game, you have to be willing to be curious and you have to be willing to try and experiment. Because no single situation in this game is the same. It will ever repeat. You might have a question for a play that may not repeat. Yeah, just be willing to let that curiosity flow out of you and have a good attitude.
I like that. And my favorite question, and I never give this to anyone beforehand, who has been the greatest influence on you as a player? It could be multiple people. It doesn't have to be one.
I know I've talked about them so many times, and I still think I haven't talked about them enough to sum up what they mean to me and how much they've helped me grow. But obviously, it's my cousins. And they're so different as players and as coaches. So they've, all three of them, I talked about Esteban a lot. I talked about Christian, Gio. He has this mind that I have not seen from anyone before. Like the tricks and the, I can't even explain it. Like he's so clever. And Christian, I don't want to go into detail about each of them, but honestly, they've built me up as a player. I have had very important coaches in club that have, I'm so grateful for, but if it weren't for those three guys, I take anything that I see from them and I try to immediately apply it to my own game, whether it be technically or physically or it be mentality and attitude-wise. Those are my biggest influences. They're my biggest role models. And that's just, I can't even put it into words.
Hello, everyone. I hope you have all enjoyed this conversation with Cassandra because it really captures the full picture of what a soccer journey can look like when there is when it's driven by love of the game and having a support system of family, coaches, and friends. In part one, we heard how she grew up here in DFW, bouncing between environments, playing with boys, leaning on her cousins and coaches to keep pushing her to a new level. We get an inside look at her opportunities as she was a young 14-year-old player going over as part of a new program to Villarreal camps and ID camps, having the curiosity and the consistency of just showing up long before her scholarship to Spain was ever on the table. In part two, we follow that story overseas where Cassandra pulls back the curtain on life in Spain, the training structure, the small-sided decision-making, learning to let the ball do the work, navigating the pressures of being a foreigner. And we walk through the hardest part, her tearing her ACL away from home, coming back to Texas, rehabbing alongside her sister, and trying to figure out who she is outside of the game while still wanting to play. If you're a parent, I hope you caught how her mom and dad handled all this. The support, the sacrifice, and the rides everywhere. But also giving Cassandra ownership to have tough conversations, advocating for herself. And if you're a player, there's so much to take away from her focus on attitude, curiosity, and be willing to ask questions and learn, even when things are not going your way. I want to give a huge thanks for Cassandra for trusting me with her story off and on the pitch.
Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.